Welcome to the Amrens Podcast, episode 92. It's Wednesday, May 28th, 2008. Hi again, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Arthur, and I'm a gay American now living in New Zealand. And moving to New Zealand is the main topic today. That's up first. Then after that, I've got some updates about the new podcast host site and the new feed, and also just a bit of personal news. But first, today's main topic. Today's topic is inspired by listener questions about moving to New Zealand and what the country's like to live and those kinds of things. And so today I'm going to try to answer some of those questions. Now, in some ways, episode 90, Kiwi Customs, was kind of part one of this topic because I talked about some of what it's like to live in the country. You might also want to go back and listen to Amrens 55, Being an Expat, which, of course, was also inspired by listener questions, because it talks about some of the more general things that anyone moving to New Zealand or any other country are likely to experience. But first up, the most obvious question of all, why New Zealand? Well... That's a good question, that. Now, a lot of what I talk about today and what I've already talked about in previous episodes, it kind of points to my answer, because it's a great place to live. And, of course, it's not paradise. No place is. There's no such thing. But it is a really good place to live. As you probably remember, if you're a longtime listener, I never actually chose New Zealand. I used to say that I chose Nigel and New Zealand came along for the ride. And that's literally true, but if I hadn't liked it, I wouldn't have stayed here, or I wouldn't have moved here in the first place, even. But, of course, later I did choose New Zealand when I became a citizen of New Zealand. I'm what's called a dual national, which means I'm a citizen of both the U.S. and New Zealand. But I would always advise anyone who's thinking about moving here to visit first, before you decide to move. Because while I love it here, it's obviously not for everyone. The pace of life here is slower than in the U.S., especially in urban and suburban areas that I'm more familiar with. And that just won't suit some people. New Zealand is on the edge of the world from a U.S. and European perspective, so it takes a long time to travel between here and there, and the flights cost a lot. There's no two ways about that. Although, as a little aside, earlier this week, Air New Zealand runs a small web offshoot site called Grab a Seat, and they were having specials to various places, including Los Angeles and San Francisco, and they were doing a Dutch auction, where it starts at the high price and then would drop every hour until they were sold out. It ended up that the ones to Los Angeles sold out after about when they reached about $1,000, I think. And the ones to San Francisco sold out once they reached $799. And Nigel and I seriously considered grabbing a couple of those seats, but we just decided it was too short notice because it was the first couple of weeks of June that you could do this. And it wasn't going to work out for us. But that sort of thing does come up from time to time, so you never know. You might suddenly get a message in the podcast that we're making a short-notice trip to the U.S. But anyway, I digress. Normally, flights between New Zealand and almost anywhere are pretty darn expensive. So what that means is you have to be prepared that once you get here, you're going to be staying here for a while, unless you're independently wealthy, in which case it doesn't matter. But if you have any plans of traveling back and forth frequently, you may have to rethink that. Anyway, there's plenty here to recommend the place for me. The climate is generally mild, with some exceptions. The political climate is sane. The environment is both clean and accessible. Nowhere in New Zealand is more than an hour from a beach, and most people actually live within a few minutes of the seashore. Here in Auckland, it's mostly in harbors and sheltered waters, but still, within a few minutes, I can be at the water's edge. Now, Heather asked what advice I would have for people who have to move to New Zealand without being able to visit it for whatever reason. And basically, it's the same as for anyone. Read as much as you can about the country beforehand to understand it. It wouldn't hurt to see a few New Zealand movies either, like Whale Rider, for instance. Now, I have some specific questions from Patrick, which will let me talk about particular issues that I know some others of you share. First, he asks, how does the healthcare system, not the financial parts necessarily, compared to the U.S.? Basically, the answer is that New Zealand has a single-payer, universal coverage system. Now, Americans would typically call this system socialized medicine, but that term distorts reality because it's loaded with political overtones and things. All New Zealand citizens and permanent residents are covered by the scheme, and that covers 100% of hospitalization, including both surgery and treatment for disease. It also subsidizes prescriptions, and it subsidizes visits to the doctor for most people. And because of that, probably, about 80% of New Zealanders have no private health insurance of any kind. But Patrick's question wasn't about the cost as much as about the quality. And it's on a par with anything you'd find in any other first world country. However, surgical care is provided first to those who have the most acute need, with others going on to waiting lists, which is fairly typical of most socialized systems. The length of time that a person spends on the list depends on a lot of factors, including, obviously, what the needed procedure is, because some have higher demand than others. There's also currently a shortage of medical professionals, and I'll talk a little bit about that just in passing a bit later on. You'll read in the press from time to time about slip-ups, huge mistakes, and other problems. Well, since the hospitals here are all publicly owned, or nearly all of them, you'd expect to hear about these things. Say, because in America, for instance, where the hospitals are corporate-owned, they can do a lot to hide the problems from public attention. But it's not so easy to keep things quiet when the people you're serving own the hospital. I mean, the hospitals are answerable to their district health boards, and they're in turn answerable to Parliament. So you can't really hide up. You can't really hide mistakes or problems. Now, I've never needed hospitalization, thankfully, but I've certainly benefited from subsidized or free prescriptions and totally free medical tests. I do have private health insurance so that if something does go wrong, I can be treated privately and not have to go on a waiting list. But I don't actually need the insurance, and so I've often thought about dropping it. I think it's a leftover from living in America where you had to have health insurance or you were doomed, pretty much. I sort of keep it as kind of a safety blanket, I guess you could say, but I don't really need it. And as I said, the quality is the same as you'd find anywhere else. The problem with all socialized systems are waiting lists. And the waiting lists vary in length depending on what's wrong with you. If you have private health insurance, you can be treated immediately through the private system, but only about 20% of New Zealanders actually take part in that. Now, I did say that citizens and permanent residents are covered, but temporary residents aren't. And that means that anyone who's here on a tourist visa or a temporary work visa will need to have private health insurance or else pay for their treatment themselves. And the way you become covered is to become either a citizen or a permanent resident. And there's a number of ways that can happen, and I'll talk a little bit about that later on. But Patrick also asked, you read all sorts of awful things about crime in New Zealand in the Herald and on Stuff, the Herald website, nzherald.co.nz, I think it is, and Stuff, which is stuff.co.nz, and that's owned by Fairfax Newspapers. But is it, as I suspect, sensationalism? Is the crime rate there in any way comparable to the U.S.? Well, the short answer is that it's in no way comparable. For example, when someone is murdered in New Zealand, it makes the national news. However, property crimes like burglary are a problem, as are assault, which are often related to robbery, and those kinds of things. We have a big problem with what are called gangs, but they're not street gangs like in the U.S. They're more like criminal gangs that you see in Europe. They deal mostly in drugs, but they get involved in almost any illegal activity, given half a chance. Still, most people would never actually see any sign of criminal activity, apart maybe from burglary. New Zealand, as in most developed countries, most crime is committed by poor people against other poor people. So the vast majority of New Zealanders don't actually see it personally. Handguns, fully automatic, and military-style weapons are banned except under exceptional circumstances. So very few crimes involve guns. Of course, knives and clubs can be every bit as deadly, but the odds of a victim's survival are much greater than if they've been shot. And of course, the New Zealand police are still unarmed. But too much of the crime in New Zealand is related to drugs one way or another, and especially what we call P, crystal methamphetamine. And as with other countries, this is becoming the focus of government attention as they basically try to stamp it out. So no, New Zealand's crime problem is nowhere near as bad as urban America or even parts of Australia, but it's bad for us. And that's why the New Zealand media go on about it so much. It's all relative. So for us, it's bad, and that's why the media focuses on it. But it's nowhere near as bad as other places. Patrick then asked, I know National is making strides in the next election, but do you feel that the political system there is more, sane seems like a poor choice of words, but it'll do, than in the U.S.? Could a national win there impact the country as much as and as negatively as the Republican control of the government in the early 2000s did here? The answer is no, it wouldn't. The two major parties in New Zealand, Labour, which currently leads the government, and National, the current opposition party, both start with certain assumptions. That government is in charge of providing some fundamental things, education, healthcare, policing, firefighting, those kinds of things. The arguments are over how these things will be provided and what the priorities are, but not about their existence. It's taken for granted. Now, the current leader of the National Party is named John Key, and he's worked to pull his party back toward the center. He has assured voters that New Zealand will remain nuclear-free, which is a huge issue to the vast majority of New Zealanders. He's also promised that there will be no sale of state-owned assets like Air New Zealand, the railroads, power companies, etc., during their first term if they win the next election. However, their front bench, which is basically the leaders of their party in parliament and presumably the people who would be senior ministers in a national-led government, they all voted against the New Zealand Civil Unions Law, and nearly all are old guard, which means they've been there a long time. So I'm not confident that they've moved to the center and abandoned their neoconservative ways, despite what the leader is trying to do with the party generally. I believe that New Zealand will do better under a Labour-led government, as it's had for the past 9 years, or 8 years. And it's got solidly centrist policies. Now, they're not perfect. Some Labour MPs also voted against the Civil Union Law, for example. But on balance, I think that Labour is better positioned to lead New Zealand in a way that most New Zealanders want, and to bring all New Zealanders along with them, which is actually a big ask if you stop to think about it. Even so, if National does win the next election, it wouldn't be anything like when Bush Cheney took power in the U.S., and the National Party is nothing like the U.S. Republican Party. In fact, in American terms, the Nationals are a bit like so-called Blue Dog Democrats. The people who are most like U.S. Republicans are all in minor right-wing parties, nowhere near the mainstream. And they've actually got no hope of getting into the mainstream either. But the National Party is probably more liberal, in the modern sense of the word, than Britain's Conservative Party. In fact, it's a bit like Tony Blair's Labour Party or the Labour Party of Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. Our Labour Party is solidly centrist, but kind of like Liberal Democrats in the US and maybe like some of the displaced Labour MPs in the UK. But put another way, our centre is to the left of the US, UK, or Australia, and both our major parties are pretty close to the centre overall. So in general terms, our politics tend to be somewhat to the left of Britain, the US, or Australia. I'm actually not quite sure how it compares with Canada, which is what I was starting to say, in case you're wondering. I've also received practical questions about how easy it is to get things in New Zealand. And as a general rule of thumb, products available in New Zealand are the same or equivalent to what you'd find in the US or Europe. Some things like appliances, you know, fridges and washing machines and so on, are pretty cheap. But other things are more expensive. And there's no way I can give a blanket answer as to whether you'd find a specific thing that you want or whether it's expensive or not. But many of the retail stores in New Zealand operate websites where you can check out the prices of whatever it is you're interested in. Now, if you want to compare prices, you can use Google to convert the prices for you. And this is a good thing to keep in mind for anything, really. For example, if you wanted to know what $10.99 New Zealand is in US dollars, you type 10.99 NZD in USD and click search. And the result will appear. And when I did it, it said that 1099 New Zealand dollars equals, I'm going to read this, 8.612863 US dollars. So basically, 1099 New Zealand is around 861 US today, or at that moment. So that gives you some way of comparing prices directly. But you have to do both sides of the equation. If you're going to compare prices, you also have to compare incomes, because most people complain that New Zealand incomes are low as compared to the US. But it's all relative, because other costs of living are low as well. It's really difficult to compare apples to apples when you're comparing the cost of living in New Zealand with the cost in any other country. In the U.S., for example, in Illinois, where I'm from, the schools and all those kinds of things, and all the local amenities, schools, police, fire, parks, all of that stuff, was funded out of property taxes, which was obviously a levy on the property you owned. In New Zealand, all of those things, not all of them, schools, police, fire, all that kind of stuff, healthcare is all funded out of income tax. The local taxes, which we call rates, are for things like parks, maintaining local streets, and lighting, those kinds of things, lighting of the streets. And they're much, much lower than what my family is paying back in Illinois. So, like I said, everything's relative. Now, you may recall that this whole topic originally came up with a phone message from Dan in Seattle, which I played on episode 86. And I advised then, as I always do, that people considering moving here read history, because that's the base which the modern nation is built on. I mean, all nations are built on their history, and it's important to know their history. And a good book for that is The Penguin History of New Zealand by Michael King. And I've recommended that several times, and it is an excellent book. It's easy to read. It's pretty breezy, I think. And it will give you a good basic background on how New Zealand came to be. But I also recommended, I also recommended watching programs on TVNZ on demand. But I've since learned that many of the programs aren't available outside New Zealand. Sorry about that. I mentioned before the movie Whale Rider. And there are a lot of other New Zealand movies too, of course. I mentioned that one in particular because it may help you to understand a little bit about Maori culture. New Zealand is a bicultural nation with a multicultural society. And what that means is that New Zealand was founded on the relationship between the English crown and the Maori people. And that relationship has remained at the core of New Zealand as it's developed. Today, of course, New Zealand is a multicultural society, and it's got immigrants from all over the world, especially Pacific Islands, Asia, the Middle East, Europe, Africa, South America, everywhere, pretty much. You need to understand the special position of the Maori people in New Zealand, because pretty much everything is based on that. You also need to understand that New Zealand is multicultural, because if you don't like diversity, you won't like New Zealand, especially Auckland, but many other cities as well. And if you're racist or xenophobic, you're probably best to stay away because you won't be welcome here. Which is not to say that all places are equally tolerant, because they're not. Christchurch has a reputation for hostility to some foreigners, especially ones who don't look European. And small rural communities can be suspicious of outsiders, even when they come from elsewhere in New Zealand, truth be known. But overall, most New Zealanders are tolerant of others and their differences, because as I've said before, it's a laid-back, kind of easygoing society. They tend to not be too worked up about people who are different. A good question that came from several people is, how easy is it to find a job in New Zealand? And at the moment, there are shortages in a lot of areas, especially fields like healthcare, which I mentioned before, engineering, teaching, Archer, IT, and other areas. Most employers complain about not being able to find workers, so the chances of finding a job in New Zealand are really pretty good. And there are a variety of ways of getting to live in New Zealand, and I'm frankly not qualified to offer any advice on that, especially since everything's changed since I came here in 1995. But the best way to start out is probably with the website of the New Zealand Immigration Service, which is immigration.govt.nz. And of course, there is a link on my blog. I'll put a link in the show notes as well. However, anyone who qualifies for residence is permitted to bring their partner too, regardless of gender. Now, I really like that about this country, and it's in such stark contrast and dramatic contrast to my homeland that I always have to mention that. On the immigration website, you'll see a whole bunch of different areas. There's a skilled migrant category, there's a work-to-residence category, and there's also short-term work visas. There's a whole variety of ways that you can come to New Zealand, even if you just want to sort of try it out. There are ways you could probably make that happen. But I would suggest going to the immigration website and going through the different areas and seeing what might fit your own situation. If you really want to do it, that's probably the best way. Now, in New Zealand, there are a variety of immigration consultants who specialize in helping people come to New Zealand. Some of them have offices in other countries as well, particularly England, London. But I also believe in some U.S. cities. So you might want to do some research on that as well if you want somebody basically to take care of dotting the I's and crossing the T's for you. But in all the stuff that I've been talking about, you probably will have noticed that I didn't focus just on the good things, that I spent most of my time talking about realities. And that's because sales jobs can be found pretty much everywhere, including on government websites. And my purpose in doing this is to tell you about moving to New Zealand from the perspective of someone who's done it. Now, I arrived here knowing very little about New Zealand or how to survive here. So I just want to kind of try to pass on some of what I've learned through this podcast. And today's episode is sort of maybe a start of the conversation, you might say, about what that means, because I haven't put it all together in one place before. However, I do have to say that I absolutely love living here, and I can't imagine living anywhere else. The climate in Auckland suits me, and so does the environment. The politics here are rational, and they don't use the vicious divisiveness that you often see in the U.S. All people are assumed to possess dignity, and they're treated with fairness and are expected to do the same with others. I can be free to be me as a gay man, as an immigrant, as a member of society. In short, it's a great place to live. Now, if there's anything I didn't talk about, or if you feel that I didn't talk in enough depth about something, just let me know. In fact, if there's anything you'd like to know about in general, just ask. I'm always willing to talk about whatever listeners are interested in. And so by all means, feel free to contact me to ask me to go into more detail. And you can send an email to Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrins.com. But that actually wraps up that side of it for today, because I would prefer to do follow-up questions next time, if that's all right. But it actually does bring me to my next topic, which is the future of the website. What an ordeal this has been. For those of you who don't know, last week, the Podomatic, the site that's been hosting my files since the beginning, decided to do what they laughingly called an upgrade, and it ended up basically torpedoing the whole site. It took me hours to get my episode posted. I think it was about 12 hours from memory. And even then, their site was so messed up that I found out that it was going to take 24 hours for files to migrate through the system. It ended up being a good 12 hours after I posted it before it finally showed up in iTunes. And by that point, you'd already started the holiday weekend in the U.S. So it was just a total disaster. As it happens, however, I had posted it already to the new site, which is amrinspodcast.com. Amrins Podcast is one word. amrinspodcast.com. And of course, it was available immediately. Not that anybody knew that, but it was available. And it resolved my determination, increased my determination to get everything finally migrated and sorted and ready to go. So now on the new site, amrinspodcast.com, you will find all of my episodes from episode one right through this one. They're all available to listen to or to download directly from that site, along with all the original show notes. All I did was cut and paste the original show notes and links and everything, most of the links. So they're all there now. And what I'm going to start doing, effective immediately, starting with this episode, is I'm posting it first to that site, and then I'm going back and posting it to Podomatic. Now, for the time being, I'm going to keep posting to Podomatic, but it's not going to be my priority anymore. Posting it to the new website will be. At some stage, it will be possible for you to resubscribe through iTunes, but I don't know when that's going to be. You can just leave iTunes the way it is now, or the way you have it now for the time being, and I'll tell you when that won't work anymore. However, if you want to, you can switch to the direct feed, which is feeds.feedburner.com/AmrinsPodcast. And of course, again, Amrins Podcast is one word. And you can subscribe to that. Now, I've done that on my own iTunes, but that means that you'll end up with two copies of the same episode if you do that now. So you might just want to make a note of it or keep it in the back of your mind. I will put it in the show notes so that it'll be written down for you somewhere. However, if you want, you can unsubscribe from the current iTunes and resubscribe to the FeedBurner one. It's up to you what you do. At some stage, the old feed won't work anymore, but I don't know when that's going to be. So I'm just giving you a warning of that now, because it could come very soon. And if that happens, if you think, gee, it's been a while since I've seen a podcast download, go over and check at amrinspodcast.com, and you'll know if there's any sudden update. Some of this I can't quite time. I've tried to make this as gentle a transition as possible, but that hasn't worked quite the way I thought it would. And this recent implosion over at Podomatic made me rush things along a bit faster than I would have liked. So not all the bits and pieces may be perfect as I do this transition. For example, on the site, I don't have any links to speak of yet, either to other podcasts or what have you. So it's a bit incomplete, and I'll fix that over time. But quite frankly, that hasn't been my priority. It's been getting all of my episodes transferred and uploaded and posted, rather, on the new site so that everything's all there and ready to go immediately. Well, that's it for the site migration update. I actually have an email address that matches the new domain, amarinspodcast.com, but I'm not using it at the moment because I'm just used to the other one, quite frankly. I actually have a bit of personal news, a personal news update, and that's that I got a phone call earlier today about the part-time job that I've been doing for the past year or so, and it seems that it's ending. They don't expect that they're going to have any work for me for at least a few months, and this is good news. The job, more often than not, has been a nuisance, or going to it has been a nuisance, and I'm actually glad to not be doing that. For the podcast, it means that if I'm going to be busy on a Friday, I can record on a Thursday. Now, of course, I didn't know that until today, so that's why I'm recording on a Wednesday, because Friday I am not going to be able to record. We're coming up to a holiday weekend, the Queen's birthday weekend. The actual holiday is Monday, but Nigel's taking Friday off, and we get to take the car in for its service, among other things. Very exciting. But I knew that I wasn't going to have a chance to record, and so I thought I'd record today instead. Well, from now on, if that sort of thing happens, I can record on a Thursday. There probably won't be any more car casts, actually, since I won't be having this timing problem, but that's all right. Actually, I'll probably also be able to be on the Archer Radio Group Show a bit more often, come to think of it, and that's a good thing, I think. But that's it for today. The little snippet of music I played earlier at the start of the episode was from Springheel Jack's original swinging jazz band from the Podsafe Music Network. I've actually played them before. And I'm going to play the entire song as my outro. As I said before, if there's anything that I didn't cover enough or that you felt I should have covered but I didn't or whatever, you can leave a comment or you can send an email to me. Now, the new comment address from now on is amarinspodcast.com. Please go there to leave your comments because before long there won't be show notes on my original blog anymore. And of course, you can send an email to me at Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at amarins.com. And you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. But that's it for today, everybody. I don't expect I'll be back again until Tuesday. I think I'll be back on Tuesday. And in case I'm right, have a great weekend, everybody. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye. Sister, sister, don't be blue. Don't stress out. So pretty soon we're getting out. And we're moving to New Zealand. So we could use a change of pace. We'll find some place where we can hide and see our world. Let's go find some